This is the Kinky Cast. This is an adult, sexually explicit podcast. If you are under 18 years old, please stop the podcast now. This is episode 48 of our weekly exploration in the kinky world of BDSM and alternative relationships. Views expressed are not representative of the management of the Kinky Cast. In today's episode, Surrender Dorothy tells of accidentally entering the kinky lifestyle at the age of 16. Here's your hosts, Woody and the Beast.
Thanks, Max. Welcome to another edition of the Kinky Cast. Sitting across the table is the Beast. How are you, man?
I am good, Woody. I am excellent. And I understood that you have an interesting guest for us today.
I do. She's number 1,000.
Woody, I haven't had 1,000 women.
Well, neither have I.
Even if I have come close.
I was going to say if we put them together. Well, no, she is the 1,000th friend on FetLife of the Kinky Cast.
Oh, yay. Yay. She's even more special.
And so when I struck up a conversation, she said, hey, I'm interesting. And I said, why? So on the phone with us is Dorothy. How are you?
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. So you said you're interesting. Other than being the 1,000th friend on our FetLife page, why are you interesting?
My friends used to nickname me Charisma because I have so many different stories and I've had so many different jobs in my life that pretty much in relation to whatever it is that we're talking about, I usually have something I can bring up that makes people kind of scratch their heads a little bit.
Okay, now first off, you say you've had all these jobs and all this because you're really old, right?
Yes, I'm 26.
So 26.
I'm in my late 20s now, yeah.
Oh, wait a minute, you're late 20s.
Yeah, so she's way over the hill.
I know. Trust me, I felt it. As soon as I hit 25, it was like
downhill
no going
from
out
there
anymore. In the yeah.
Wow, I didn't do that till I hit 20, 29. 29 was horrid.
Oh, you guys are so bad. Well,
but, yeah.
So how long have you been in this crazy lifestyle that we're in?
I have been in this lifestyle for about 9 or 10 years now, but I've only been active in local communities for about 6 years.
So. Okay, let's rewind and do the math there.
I'm doing the calculation in my head. That is a number that is 16, I believe.
16,
right.
Yeah. Okay, without getting too edgy here. Now, we say the Kinky Cast is for people over 18. It's an adult, sexually explicit podcast. And so, technically, back when you were 16 and getting in the lifestyle, you couldn't listen to this.
That's but, right.
But the fact is that you probably needed it back then. So tell us what happened back when you were 16.
When I was 16, I started rooting around on the computer for any kind of materials that, you know, kind of curious young teenagers will at that point in their life. And I happened to come across an erotica site and found myself kind of really attracted to erotica that had to do with BDSM. And I decided that that was a lifestyle that I wanted to pursue. So at the time, I don't even know if FetLife was in existence back then, but at the time, I know that there were limited places that you could go to meet somebody online. And I found somebody who was a good deal older than me. He was in his early 50s at the time, and started talking to him over the computer at pretty much a great length. And we met a few times. He flew down to where I lived quite a number of times. And unfortunately, on one of his trips into the area, we got intimate with one another. And I happened to use my safe word. And he didn't acknowledge my safe word, and he continued to sort of make advances on me. We did end up having relations with one another in a hotel room, And I happened to mention it in passing to my friend a few weeks later, because I think I was still sort of shaken up over the incident. And when I mentioned it to a good friend of mine, she brought it to the school resource officer's attention, and I was taken out of class, and the older gentleman that I had been involved with was arrested.
Is this your first sexual experience?
This was my first sexual experience. In fact, I sort of had to, it was a learning experience, of course. I was told by people around me that obviously had a lot more experience and were a lot older, that even if you do have oral sex with someone else, that you're still, you know, losing your virginity going that far with oral sex. So at the time, I thought that I maintained my virginity, but this was the very first sexual experience that I had. So,
okay. I don't know if I agree with their logic, but you definitely were in a situation you shouldn't have found yourself in, and you knew you shouldn't be there, and he just totally refused to listen to your safe word?
Yeah, in when everything came down and he was arrested and the story was brought up to him, he said that he did not hear my safe word, so he couldn't have possibly acknowledged it because he didn't hear it.
What was your safe word?
You know, when I, my safe word at the time and still is bamboo.
Okay. We always encourage people to use standard safe words such as red for a real good number of reasons, because other people in the scene know what that it means.
Yes.
You know, I've heard asparagus used for safe words, and of course, even trying to remember that is hard enough.
Well, I can tell you, I can tell you a story about asparagus. A dame in Memphis, he was using asparagus, and her slave tried to safe word. He went through cabbage, cucumber, broccoli, lettuce. He went through, I think he got out of the greens into the yellows and oranges, and he never could get to asparagus.
And that's the problem with using non-standard safe words.
But we go back. Dorothy.
Yes.
How were you pulling this off? He was flying down. You were meeting him apparently for dates. How was this working?
It wasn't working well. It wasn't working well. At the time, I had an older brother who, you know, I still do have an older brother, of course. He was 4 years older than me, so he was in college at the time, and I was at home alone. Both of my parents were working diligently to put my brother through college, so a lot of times I was at home alone, and that's when we would have our chats on the computer, our intimate chats on the computer, and then he was from Massachusetts, and he decided that he was going to come and visit. And he visited twice, and on the second time is when we sort of had our relations. We would do things whenever he would come down, like visit a zoo or visit the beach. I was living in Florida at the time, so the beach was very close and very easily, you know, easy to access. And pretty much any time that I had free that he was visiting, I would spend with him. But obviously it didn't last very long, so.
This is just such a horrific story, but you were a sociable girl in high school, I presume. Your situation was dramatic, and I understand it become quite well known, even though you tried not to have that happen. But were other members of your class dabbling in BDSM?
Not that I know of, no. I know that when everything happened, it came as a great shock to most of the people that I was involved in school. And I knew that they sort of understood the ins and outs of it. I was in kind of a higher level international baccalaureate class. So I knew that they knew what the dynamic of the relationship was with him being so much older than myself. And of course, you know, once everything happened, I had the opportunity to come back to school in, you know, the following day. And of course, I didn't. I took about 3 weeks off of school. So once the information broke sort of in the papers, I was out of school for enough time for people to wonder and begin to make connections. But nobody that I had ever spoke to that was my age at the time ever sort of joined in understanding what I was searching for in BDSM.
Because now I know that I hear younger and younger stories from on FET. You'll see a new person that's 21 and they're claiming 7 years of experience, and that I kind of do a double take there. You know, the math is kind of weird. You were overachiever.
I tried to be. I tried to be. Like any overachiever would not admit to that, I don't think. But I certainly tried to be in everything that I did and accomplished. That was, you know, I always took on a little extra burden, a little extra responsibility.
Dorothy, going into this, before the first meeting, did you have any negotiations?
No. You know, when I was 16, I didn't really know anything about the lifestyle. I knew that it was something that I was interested in, and I was so excited. I wanted to try. I think even at 16, you can have kind of a sub frenzy that you go into. But you know, none of the erotic literature that I had, that I had read up until that point involved any kind of negotiations at all. Of course, so going in kind of blind and not knowing any better because I was so young, no, we didn't really negotiate anything aside from, you know, having that established safe word that was supposed to be understood between the two of us.
I have a kind of a sideways question. Your dating life prior to this, was this your first foray into dating?
No, I had been dating in high school before. And, you know, obviously wasn't satisfied in any of the relationships that I had been involved in. Even, you know, just months before I had involved myself in this relationship, I think I tried to make just a regular vanilla relationship out to be something that involved elements of power exchange. So I would kind of ask him to do certain things to me that I knew were skirting the edges of BDSM at the time. So I think that I probably was searching for who I found because of the fact that I wanted more out of those engagements and out of those relationships. A regular relationship wasn't satisfying to me, even as a teenager. I wanted to talk and I wanted to explore and experience, and I wasn't able to do that with people that weren't in or knowledgeable about the lifestyle.
And as you've grown older and you've talked to people, you have heard this common theme and thread through a lot of stories, I'm sure, because I've heard it through a lot of stories. It just didn't seem right. There seemed to be something missing. And such comments I have heard from people that found it in their 30s or found it in their 20s or found it in their 40s, that it's just something that was missing there.
Oh, yeah.
So your early education was based almost entirely on fiction and fictionalized personal accounts of encounters.
That would be true. Yeah, that would definitely be true. And of course, that sort of worries me about what's going on today in popular culture with this popularization of the lifestyle, putting it kind of in a limelight and not necessarily explaining the ins and outs of safety with the movie 50 Shades of Grey coming out, with the how popular the book was. It concerns me that maybe other younger folks are also kind of latching onto the materials that they have available to them. And those materials are obviously kind of a dramatized account of what can happen in the lifestyle as far as, you know, what you might enjoy, but not necessarily what you definitely don't enjoy and those scars that you sort of carry with you for the rest of your life.
Yeah, 50 Shades is definitely, I'm sure you're seeing in your local community, we're seeing in ours the influx of new people. And yes. Normally a 26-year-old would be considered a newbie floating in, but you're a far more experienced newbie now.
I would never, it's really difficult to trust myself ever again, honestly. So when people see me out, they see me in public, I'm not really playing with other people just because of sort of what's happened in my life. I'm in this position now where I can't ever learn enough because you might think that you know what's good and what's safe right now. And like I said, you'll really kind of ruin yourself in a certain way. You'll carry scars with you for the rest of your life.
Yes, there is always something new to learn. I've been at it in the public community for 2 decades and privately for another decade. And mm-hmm. I'm still amazed at this new information. People just keep on coming up with new stuff. It's amazing and fun. Yeah. And fun.
Well, and that's the thing. Yeah. You were following your dreams and what was in your imagination. And that's what we all do. It's just that you did it at a much younger age. And without the resources. Yeah.
I think to a certain extent, people that are just so incandescently happy in what they're learning, what they're reading, what they're doing, they kind of get blindsided by the safety concerns or the amount of knowledge that they don't have compared to the amount of knowledge that they think that they do have. So I don't necessarily blame myself, but at the same time, nowadays I think I know a lot better. As far as, making sure that I don't just think, well, I'm happy, so this must be right, because it certainly might not be right. It could be very dangerous.
Well, you always need to expand your horizon and look into training. We say that when either a dominant or a submissive comes into the lifestyle, both need to attend the classes, both so that the submissive knows what's going on and the dominant knows what to do. And that way they can guide each other, especially if they're newbies. We were talking about 50 Shades. A couple weeks ago, we aired an episode called Beyond 50. That is dealing with a lot of authors that are preparing for the release of the movie in February. So we did a 2-part special on these authors that are talking about erotica that is based in BDSM and those sorts of things. But what you brought up earlier is, yes, it is the romantic side. It is where your dreams and your imagination goes, but it's not necessarily where your body needs to be as far as safety.
Certainly. Yeah, that's definitely a good point. That's what I was aiming towards, is that, 50 Shades, you'll read it and you'll be completely entranced by the words and the actions. But in reality, obviously, there's so much more to that in regards to safety and things like that.
You're a decade into your explorations now, and I hope that the last half of that decade has been much better than the first half of that decade.
I certainly hope so, too.
I get the feeling that it has been better.
Things are definitely calming down.
Good. Well, we don't want them too calm.
We're getting exciting. I don't know.
So you've had some comparisons. To our listeners that might be newer and are basing their explorations on the fiction, how does fiction compare to reality? What are the differences?
I don't even know how to answer that. There are so many stark differences between fiction and reality when it comes to our lifestyle and what kinds of materials are available for folks out there. I know that it's very rare that I see aftercare mentioned in fiction that sets aside 50 Shades of Grey, but having read so much and sort of got my start just reading things on the internet, like erotic fan fiction and things like that, that have those BDSM overtones, they completely usually leave out the aftercare portion, which is probably one of the most important aspects of playing with somebody, is making sure that they are set and they're safe and they're happy afterwards. Negotiation, of course. When you read a book or you happen to be reading something online, usually the negotiation is just, it kind of gets pushed to the side. Like, you don't really hear the negotiations playing out because I guess it wouldn't make for good literature. But that's certainly something that is a stark opposite. So involving yourself in your community and taking whatever BDSM 101 courses that you possibly can should teach you kind of the fundamentals of playing with somebody as far as the negotiations, the actual playtime. Most groups offer educational presentations on what might be interesting to you. And then, of course, the aftercare portion as well, making sure that you have somebody that you can rely on to take care of you afterwards.
I think an element that I've saw missing from the fiction is usually a focus on the two characters, or three, whichever the case may be, and not much inclusion of their background on their experiences or their involvement with others in what we do. it's very much focused, and you think it's isolated, and that this is a secret and all that. And really, we have very dynamic and exciting and well-rounded communities in so many places. And those communities are not a character at all in any of the fiction that I have run across.
No, 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 of course not. No, certainly not. And if they are, they're all in the wrong way. That's probably the number one thing that is available to you as a resource is your local community. And I think if I had started differently and started within the local community trying to meet somebody or just learn, I probably would have been in a much better off position than I ended up being. Of course, at the time I was too young, but most people that are getting involved in the lifestyle that are of legal age, I would urge them to, you know, seek out any community ties that they possibly can, because the community is there certainly as a resource for you to learn. It's there for you as far as safe calls and things like that. So definitely getting involved in your local community is something that I would hope that you would consider first. I think one of your presenters here, Dark Innovation,
yes,
he has a motto, get thee to a munch. And that's pretty much the number one rule of getting involved in the lifestyle. It certainly is. There's a lot of fun to be had. There's a wealth of knowledge to be had, but without the community, you run the risk of doing it all wrong. You really do.
And this is the thing that's so important, is community is out there to act as a support net, to catch you if you do fall. You talk to the people that are running the munch, the community leaders, ask for a mentor. And a mentor will take you through the path without getting involved with you. And that is the real key to understanding. Especially when you're young coming into this, you got to find out where all the keys to the doors are.
I would definitely, as far as mentoring is concerned, if you happen to be involved in a local community and you're in search of a mentor, look for a mentor that is the same sex as you, as opposed to maybe a mentor of the opposite sex, simply because of the fact that there have been, you know, instances and cases of there being kind of predatory-like behavior and the word and the definition of mentor being misused. So certainly seek out any kind of help that you can, but somebody that you can rely on, certainly a mentor, somebody of the same sex, or somebody maybe of the same side of the slash, whatever you would like to consider it, is probably going to be your best bet for honest. The information won't be too subjective.
Just going back to the munch, there is a hot scene there. The couple meets at the munch. That could be well-written erotica.
It could be.
Her tension, her nervousness about coming to the munch, and the perfect man across the table, and she's unsure what his status is, and all of the dancing and the nerves over the next couple of days as she tries to find him out, and that could be good fiction.
I love that idea, because not only would people read it, it would push people into the arms of the local community, because when they are thinking that they're in search of this special relationship that makes them feel the way that they want to feel, they will know that they can find that special somebody or those resources at a munch. You know, I love that idea. And it certainly would be 100% more likely of a story than any of the other erotic fiction that I've read.
The Beast is writing as fast as he can right now. I see he's a new author.
Yeah, well, no, I am not the author.
I knew the Beast was an overachiever, actually, so I could tell automatically that was something that was really interesting to him.
Actually, I'm going to feed it to one of my companions, Kate Kinsey, who is an author, and see what she can do with it. Her first BDSM book was Red. It was a BDSM murder mystery with the community in it, but it was still a murder mystery, so not exactly entry material for most people. But
right.
And she may be wanting to collaborate with you on this feature.
That would be wonderful.
You have been to munches now.
Yes.
At 18, what happened?
Let's see. At 18, I was just starting in college. I was a psychology major, and I was still in search of somebody. At the time, I didn't know exactly where to find that person that I was looking for. There was kind of a hiatus that occurred for me because I knew that I needed to take a break and learn as much as I could. It wasn't until I turned about 20 that I found the local community. And when I did, they just welcomed me with open arms. The first community event that I ever went to was a costume party for Halloween. And costuming being one of my fetishes, I found a lot of interest, and I actually drove 3.5 hours to this costuming party that was part of a Central Alabama group. And they welcomed me just with open arms. They were so kind and so sweet to me. And they even kind of awarded me the costume contest prize. So they really made me feel like I was part of the group right from day one. I am so very happy that I did that. Even at the time, the resources were so limited for me to find a local group, but I knew that I had to do it the right way this time, so I drove 3.5 hours to try to find a community that I could learn and I could thrive in.
And this is just 4 years ago.
Yes.
Just speaks to the explosive growth that we have seen over the last few years.
Hey, Beast, are you as curious about what the costume was as I am?
Oh, I was waiting for you, Woody. I am thinking a period piece.
It wasn't actually, it wasn't that great of a costume. That's why I know that those people just did it out of pure kindness. I went as a candy corn witch. So I had kind of striped tights on, and I had a little black and orange dress and a witch hat that had a polka dot bow on it. When I rolled up in my car, they did not know what to think, because at the time, I was one of the youngest people, I think, in the group. Like I said, they were so kind and so magnanimous to me. I just couldn't resist being a part of their group. I attended a few events after that, even found a poly family to live in while I was in that group. And although I found myself not to enjoy the dynamic of a poly relationship the way that I thought that I would, it certainly was a learning experience that without the community I couldn't have had.
Poly is definitely not everybody's cup of tea.
No, it's not.
I am a poly, and I am with two monos, and it makes some interesting tension.
Don't feel like the Lone Ranger there.
Makes some interesting tension indeed. And communication is important, and time management, and all
time
that.
Time management is probably, yeah.
All right. 18, you were still in your shell, processing.
I was licking my wounds at the time.
Now, was this a really arduous task, or just took you a while to get your legs back under you, or a lot of time on the couch?
No, you know, I think it was kind of, it was difficult for me, because the gentleman that I had so many strong feelings for, once he went to prison, I had to deal with a lot of different legality issues. I had to frequently talk to the public defender. I was sort of involved in the case. And of course, because the judicial system takes so long, even though he was arrested when I was 17, you know, he wasn't really incarcerated until I was about 20 years old. So it was a difficult time for me, because I was not able to move on. I was stuck in place.
And not by your choice here.
No, yeah, and I also, you know, it was very shocking for my family, most of all, because at the time, obviously, at 16, I wasn't out to my parents. And this particular incident, obviously, was revealing to my mother and my father at the time. They had their own ways of sort of dealing with it that involved kind of moving away from me. So it was almost like a tough love situation for a number of years. I'm happy to say that I have a wonderful relationship with my parents now. But as you can imagine, my parents were just, they were really so embarrassed over the entire situation. So they took a number of years to themselves and moved out of the state. So it was difficult, because at 18, just kind of becoming an adult and having thought that I knew everything and being shown that I didn't know anything at all, it was a difficult time to be on my own.
Wow, that is a scary, scary, scary situation. What do you think about this magic number of 18, this arbitrary number that we that is the line from a childhood to adulthood? It's a rather strong line. When you cross it, what do you think about it?
But it's very arbitrary.
It's very arbitrary. What's your opinion of it, Dorothy?
You know, when I was a psychology major there in the college that I attended in Florida, we were taught a lot about developmental psychology. I know exactly what it is that you speak of. I think that certain people are going to mature at a more rapid rate than other people. You know, obviously, on the other side of the coin, people are going to wait a lot longer to mature. And I think that I was just one of those persons that matured very young, very, very early on in life, again, with the kind of overachiever motif. I wanted to be an adult. I wanted to have adult feelings. I wanted to have an adult relationship. And obviously, I did not know what I was doing at the time. So I think that saying that people kind of move at 15 into a state of maturity that they didn't have before, I think that that did sort of occur right before my incident. So it very well could be that those were the feelings and the emotions that I was feeling as well, which kind of provoked me to explore what was available to me in the lifestyle. But I think that to say across the board people just mature at a certain age is probably more like a falsehood than you would think that it would be.
I have found that for years, and it's frightening. There are some 16-year-olds that I think need access to certain bits of knowledge that it's not popular or even legal sometimes to give them access to. And then there are some 39-year-olds that still don't need the keys to the car.
That's right. It's a slippery slope. It certainly is to identify at what age would be appropriate to start making helpful resources available to folks that want to seek that information out. For me, I don't know if it would have changed my situation. I would like to think that it would have, but I think to a certain extent, there are people that are twice my age, that it doesn't matter what you tell them, they're going to believe what they're going to believe. And if at that point in my life, I felt like everything was safe and everything was fine and everything was copacetic, then I obviously was made to feel very, very wrong about that. But I don't know if people, I can only hope that people would change their minds if they were told directly that the best way to meet somebody is through the local community in a safe, welcoming environment of like a Munch.
Well, it is really interesting is porn, and you were reading porn, is really easy for everybody to find. Real knowledge is much harder to find. As you well know,
Yeah. The
real knowledge is much harder to find. You type BDSM into your computer, and what are the first couple of dozen sites that you come to are all porn related, which is Idealized fantasy relationships. And you have to dig down on page 6 or 7 to start coming into some of the more valuable resource information. And most people just take the easy way and click the first few links, and that starts forming their opinions and their positions.
Yeah. I mean, when you think about it, at what age were you told not to talk to strangers? You know, and yet we continue to talk to strangers, even though we know that it's unsafe. We know that there are detrimental consequences. We still will willfully talk to strangers.
Eagerly.
So I would hope that it would change people's perspective if more educational resources were available to younger folks that are reaching out and trying. I mean, you can get a copy of 50 Shades anywhere you go. So it's dangerous to think that these materials, the ones that we don't want, are in the hands of people that are going to be at the early stages of sub-frenzy or wanting to get out in the lifestyle aggressively.
Well, 50 Shades, and before 50 Shades, we had 9.5 Weeks and some of the other classics. And 9.5 Weeks was definitely not for the casual reader. Have you read it?
I have not, but it reminds me of being very young, at the age of probably 15, going to my local Blockbuster video store and being able to rent The Secretary and not having anybody question me or anything like that. I literally just rented the movie, The Secretary, and watched that movie. And that was another thing that sort of influenced my entrance into the lifestyle, my aggressive approach to entering the lifestyle without very much of an education, because those resources were so readily available to me at such a young age. And yet, obviously, educational resources are not. I mean, we didn't even have a sex ed class in my school.
Well, it's still considered taboo in many places. Maggie was a flawed character in The Secretary. They portrayed her as a flawed character. But by the end of the movie, BDSM had saved her. Kind of a interesting spin there on things.
Yes.
I can see how that would be a totally confusing to a young person, to anybody, thinking this is a magic. And it is magical. You will agree with that.
It would have been interesting if you rented The Story of O.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's funny, though, that you mentioned that as well, because I did not see The Story of O until I visited the Mark one evening. And I was 20, 25, 24, 25 at the time when they were showing that movie. So even in local communities, like, I guess we try almost to keep certain things in and certain things out. And I had never even heard of this film before. So I was able to sit down and watch it and experience it. But yeah, again, that would have been, that would have been a lot more interesting, certainly a lot more of a revealing look at BDSM and slavery and things like that.
You might want to also check out Ernest Green has put together a very, I've been told, very well written. I've yet to delve into it. A book called The Master of O.
The Master of O.
Yeah, looking at from the master's perspective.
That would be interesting.
And Ernest and his wife, Nina Hartley, were on our show. Ernest publishes Taboo, one of those magazines that gives us a false sense of reality.
That's episode 33, Beast.
Thank you, Woody. You know, even people in our lifestyle help perpetuate the fantasy, and it's a big business. What do we need to do differently, Dorothy? Help us. Us old folks, Woody and I have more than a century between us.
Why did you have to put it that way? Man.
Oh.
Well, we have almost a half a century of BDSM experience.
That is true.
Mm-hmm. All right. So, anyway, you are of this generation that is flooding the community with new people.
Right.
What do we need to do differently to meet the needs and to avoid people being wounded the way you were upon your entry? What do we do?
Oh, goodness. I mean, there's a lot that's being done, obviously, right now with the National Coalition for Sexual Freedom. There's a lot of resources that are available out there for younger people. I know that the NCSF has a very young face to it, in my opinion. It's something that young people are drawn to, especially like liberal young people. One thing that I think that we can probably do is make sure that the education that the younger folks are getting is in direct relation of what it is that they're looking to learn, because of the fact that so often we think that people are into a certain core group of kink, and it might not be so outside of what young people are interested in today. So for instance, if you have a young person entering the lifestyle that's very interested in biting or very interested in age play, giving them resources that directly relate to what it is that they're most interested in. Of course, continuing, you know, your core dynamic of demos in order to sort of allow them to learn something new. But if that's what they're most interested in, they're going to find it anywhere that they possibly can. And it might potentially be in the arms of somebody that's harmful to them. So certainly make the group dynamic and interesting to younger folks that are coming in. Realize that maybe some of the older kinks that are out there might not be as attractive to newer people that are entering the lifestyle. I know that recently in my community, gender identity is something that's become of interest to a lot of people, not only people that are living life in transition, but also people that just want to learn and want to be able to hold a higher respect for that group of people by having the knowledge and the education about them. So definitely making sure that the demos that are being taught and the information that's being given to them is of interest to them.
Okay, now, question. We are meeting them where they are, which is important. How do we keep the interest and the excitement going for the harder core stuff and keep people coming to that? We all agree that the rope classes are exciting and thrilling and everybody piles in, right?
Right.
How do we make the negotiation class, the aftercare class, the personal responsibility, how do we get those messages across? It's much less glamorous.
Right. I think that some communities do a really good job providing resources to their members. For instance, having the BDSM basics class, it has to be accessible. You can't have like a private club teaching it only to members. It has to be a class that anybody can attend, no matter what it is that you're interested in, no matter what it is that you want to learn. This is the way that we build a good foundation, is by offering these BDSM 101 classes that sort of define things to an extent that everybody's comfortable with, in an environment everybody's comfortable with. So I think that's probably the easiest way to build a solid foundation for what it is that they want to learn. People that are more interested in heavy impact play and things like that, I would really encourage them to do all that they can to get a good foundation, really learn about aftercare, learn about negotiation, learn about all that there is to learn about regarding BDSM so that you have a higher respect for it before you start to engage in kind of heavier play that hopefully, you know, your local communities will also be providing demos on.
Your suggestions are meet them where they are, make it very accessible without a lot of hoops and stuff to jump through to get this information.
Right. I can tell you from experience, just being a younger girl and a lot of younger women that you're going to ask that are involved in the community on FetLife, I have over 100 messages in my inbox right now, over 100, and they come in the course of a week. And when I answer these emails, I will specifically say, if you would like to meet me, I will be at the Munch on Wednesday evening. And a lot of times, I'll get a response back that'll say like, oh, cool, see you there, but tell me about yourself. And this is kind of just that predatory behavior that I would warn anybody about. I have a handful of people that I'll go to the leaders of my local community and I'll say, so did this one ever end up contacting you? What about this one? What about this one? And a lot of times they're not interested in attending a munch at all. They simply are going to be here to engage in that predatory behavior. So you're going to have those dangers out there, whether you're educating people as much as possible or not. So I would certainly say that it's a start, that there's always going to be bad news out there. And you just have to sort of have a really good filter for it. And that kind of filter comes with the experience of being involved in the community.
I'll probably get some calls for this comment, but even Christian Mingle has some problem children, right?
Yes.
Everywhere we go, we have problem children.
The corner church, the PTA, every place has issues.
Walmart.
Exactly.
Well, what is it? Have you seen the commercial with, he's got this creepy self?
Oh, yeah.
Yes, Rob Lowe.
Rob Lowe, creepy.
Yes.
Rob Lowe at the movie theater, or
yes.
Creepy Rob Lowe,
yes.
At the pool with his binoculars. We have
He's
them everywhere.
He's at the rec center watching people swim.
Yeah.
And I think there is this illusion when you come into the community. We call it a community, and there's an assumption that there is a secret handshake or everybody is all goodness and joy, and that's not true in any community, and it's not true in ours either. And sometimes people may not be actually bad, but they just aren't a good match for you.
Well, in addition to that, there's a lot of subdivisions in our community, and there's cliques and there's hierarchies, and you're going to have to fight your way through this to find out where you want to be. I came from the West Coast, and believe me, I saw cities that had three separate communities that didn't even associate with each other.
Yeah.
It's really tough. So you have to say, I'm a member of this one, and then the other two are going to shun you. But the fact is that you still need a community to get into so that you can be safe and have people that will vet potential suitors for you.
Yeah, you're going to need references at some point. Even for friends, you're going to need references. So definitely find a community that fits you. In my personal town, you know, I would not even consider our area to be that large. And yet we have a group for munches. We have a group for educational presentations. We have a group called Puff for Kink Under 40. So if you're a younger person, you can head out to this particular group and feel a little bit more at ease and a little bit more welcome. If you are a younger person and you have anxiety about attending a group where people might be engaging in high protocol, or they might have been in the lifestyle for a decade more than you have been in the lifestyle. So definitely find a community that fits you. I'm sure that there's one out there. Don't give up until you find one.
Great advice.
Yes, great advice. Well, Dorothy, what else can you add? We're coming down to the end of our show. You have been a great guest.
Well, thank you.
What is the quote that you want to be known for?
The quote that I want to be known for is probably the quote from my FetLife page. And I don't put that much on my profile simply because of the fact that I'm worried that people will begin to think that they know me. And my quote from my FetLife page has been kind of a live-by quote as I've kind of journeyed through the lifestyle, and it's from the Lewis Carroll book, Alice in Wonderland. And Alice is asking what road she should take, and the Cheshire Cat responds, where do you want to go? And Alice says, I don't know where I want to go. And the cat responds by saying, then it really doesn't matter. So definitely take the journey, go on your journey, do it safely, and allow yourself to be embraced by a local community because that's what they're there for. They're there to back you up. And honestly, it doesn't matter what community you're in. It doesn't matter what months you go to. It doesn't matter what level of experience you have. Like you said before, everybody can learn a little bit of something out there. Hopefully, you know, it's an obligation of your community to teach you that.
Fantastic. Dorothy, thank you for being on the show tonight. And this was a great help to a lot of people, I'm sure.
You have been listening to episode 48 of The Kinky Cast. The Kinky Cast is a production of Rooster in the Round. Next week we have Callie and Kinneman of the DominantGuide.com. On behalf of Woody, the Beast, and all our kinky crew, I'm Max.